Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
630 CHED Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins. Weekdays at 6 on 630 CHED.
In the third period, it's 3-3 Sabres and Devils. No score. Capitals and Islanders. Rangers up 5-2 on the Penguins. Bruins and Philadelphia tied 2-2. Start of the third. Panthers leading the Hurricanes 2-1. 4 minutes into the third. 2-0 Blue Jackets over the Lightning. Second period just ended in Detroit. Red Wings up 1-0 on the Preds. Blackhawks up 1-0 on the Stars. Start of the second period, Ducks and Sharks later. Lakers up 74-48 on the Raptors 4 minutes into the third quarter. Okay, so I just got to circle back before we bring our guest in. I got to circle back to that the end of that Doug McLean interview right before we broke for the news. Doug McLean, who's a former NHL general manager with the Columbus Blue Jackets, was on Sportsnet a long time. Now he's doing a podcast 3 days a week with Nick Kypreos. So what Doug said was that Nick said on their podcast that he had heard the Oilers had been trying to make a Taylor Hall trade work with the Buffalo Sabres. And Doug also said, hey, I've been wrong before, but that's a source that I trust said that. So I haven't heard that. If Doug's heard that, I totally believe that Doug has heard that. You hear a lot of things that around this time of year, some go somewhere, some don't. I'm standing by all my previous analysis of this and by reading into what Ken Holland has said, or in some, not just reading into what he said, sometimes just blatantly listening to what he said. Any trade for the Oilers, money in, money out. Pretty hard to get a player who makes a lot of money and not overly interested in adding another fourth line type player. They have enough of those. Now, having said that, it's a general manager's job to inquire about anybody that they might think might be available and to possibly be creative to make things work. Do I still think this is hot and heavy here that this is happening? I don't. You know, Hall was held out of the lineup today. Buffalo's not going to risk injuring him because they do want to trade him. So I just want to provide some context. It is that time of year where our heads are always turning because this was reported, this was rumored, this was mentioned, this guy said this, so why did this player do this? What does this agent say? All that kind of stuff. But I still think it's going to be really darn hard for the Oilers to acquire Taylor Hall. And I'm going to go back to what I said last half hour as well about the first round draft pick. Could the Oilers part with that? Sure. You'd probably have to give up something else, and you'd probably have to beg Buffalo to retain as much money as possible, whether it was Hall or somebody else you're bringing in. And I think first, even if it's a later first round pick, I think it's valuable because you need your first rounders to play and play on their entry level contracts because the salary cap isn't going up for the next 3, 4, 5 years. Who knows? So that's the context I'll give to that. But a little something interesting for everybody to talk about, I suppose. Oilers and Senators tomorrow. It starts at 3 in the afternoon. Our face-off show is at 1:30 as we welcome Gord Wilson back to the show, who's the Senators radio analyst. Gord, thanks for sitting through that. Because Doug said that right before we went to the news. So then we kind of left it hanging because... Yeah, you heard what I said.
Where there's smoke, there's fire, right? Here's my response to that. Why would you want Taylor Hall? What has Taylor Hall done? He's got 14 playoff games under his belt, and he has 4 playoff goals under his belt. What's special about Taylor Hall? He get his paycheck, no question about that. Taylor Hall gets paid handsomely for doing what? Being the big-time guy? He's got 14 playoff games in how many years in the National Hockey League, and how many with the Edmonton Oilers, where he didn't play a playoff game. So big-time Taylor Hall isn't it's cracked up to be, as at least for me, as some would think. And why don't you go after Curtis Lazar, for heaven's sakes? He's got more goals than Taylor Hall this year. And he'd be a better fit in Edmonton, wouldn't he? My goodness. It's interesting food for thought. And Taylor is going to get moved somewhere. Whether he's going to do anything in the National Hockey League postseason is a legitimate question, in my opinion.
Well, he's having an awful year on an awful team. He has two goals, which I mean, you're right. Curtis Lazar has more goals. Adam Larson has more goals, who he was he's traded for. And I mean, and I wonder too. And look, I mentioned earlier, Gord, for you, this is around a year, right, since you had COVID.
Yeah. Yes.
So
March. When was, you know what? I got a phone call from Wayne Gretzky, March 27th.
Oh wow. Okay.
There you go.
So,
and it was 10 o'clock at night, and he was asking how I was feeling.
And I know, you know, Stoff interviewed you shortly after that. I interviewed you shortly after that. You were open about it. And I wonder, too, you know, Buffalo got hit by COVID. That couldn't have helped. And now I'm wondering, like, if I mean, you played hockey yourself, too, and professionally. Like, how are the Vancouver Canucks going to feel when – and they will come back. They will play. But I mean, it's got to factor into how some of these teams are performing that have been hit by the virus.
Absolutely. But you know what? This is the mystery virus of the world here right now, because it affects people in so many different ways. And, you know, there are a ton of professional athletes, and we'll just cite them as examples, that are in tremendous shape, and it may not affect them at all. And then you get a young player like Marco Rossi, a draft pick of Minnesota, who got hit very hard and probably still has completely or fully recovered. It just hits different. It hits people differently. And whether you're a professional athlete or, you know, a banker or an accountant or whatever you might be, it's different. And this is what, you know, I've been saying for over a year here now. It's the great mystery. It's the great unknown. And unfortunately, the Vancouver Canucks, and now you throw in a variant of this virus, and there's an even greater unknown. And so it's you just have to wait it out and see what happens. But boy, your fingers are crossed, or my fingers are crossed, at least everybody's fingers are crossed for sure. If you do get a strain of this variant, and you're not sure what's going to happen next, and if you are experiencing symptoms, how long do they last? I'm convinced that there are, and having experienced myself and probably gone at least 6 months with the difficulty to fill my lungs completely, I'm convinced, and I'm not in the greatest shape, but I'm convinced there are players who were hit with COVID at the start of this season in January or sometime before, and were affected throughout the course of the season.
And from another, so that's the health standpoint. From the scheduling standpoint, and I know the NHL says they want to do it and they'll probably go deeper into May, I still don't know if the Canucks get to 56 games. And then I wonder if other North teams get to 56 games.
Yeah, that's the another great question here. And I mean, I think the NHL, by the indications that I'm reading and seeing, I think the NHL is desperately going to try and get every team its 56 game season, regardless of where they sit in the standings come the 8th of May or whatever it might be. I think the league made a pact or sort of a promise at the beginning of the season that for the integrity of the game, they would base playoffs on standings and not points percentage. And I know it doesn't play a role in terms of a team that is out of the playoffs with, say, six games left in the season. But at the same time, there's still the draft implications and things like that that will affect the league and its integrity moving forward. So I think when the NHL says it desperately wants to get every team its 56 games in, I think they'll do everything in their power to do just that. And I think that's why we've seen a shift in some scheduling already. And the Senators, not affected by COVID whatsoever and not affected by the schedule, have now been affected by the schedule with the moving of Friday's game to Thursday. And, of course, the May 7th game that they were supposed to play against Winnipeg in Winnipeg moved to last night. You know, on first blush, Reed, it doesn't look like like it makes a whole lot of sense. But now when you're looking further down the line here in terms of trying to rejig things for seven other teams or six other teams in the division, it all of a sudden does make sense. And they're trying to free up dates to obviously look at the combinations and permutations of where the Vancouver Canucks are going to slot in. I know from a Senators perspective, they've got four games remaining against Vancouver, and they're four in a row, two at home and two on the road. And they come sometime this month. So will they happen? Who knows? Obviously, you know, between the first pause for the Vancouver Canucks until whenever things restart, there's going to be at least 7 to 10 days of possible games that the Vancouver Canucks are going to have to reschedule. And the big question now is, where do you reschedule them and when?
Yeah. Gord Wilson joining us tonight on Inside Sports, Ottawa Senators analyst, frequent guest on the show. We always love talking to you, Gord. So I'm going to ask you the Senators question from a slightly different perspective. I'm not going to ask you why they're 0-7 against the Oilers. I'm not going to ask you about them being in last place, because we talked before the season and we thought they're probably going to finish in seventh place. Yeah. I'm going to ask you this. I'm going to ask you to look on the bright side. I mean, we're 2/3 of the way through about. What do you look at a couple of things and say, you know what, that's been good. The Senators got some problems, but this isn't one of them. This is something that's good.
Well, I'll tell you what's been good. February, March, and the beginning of April. January was an absolute disaster. This team, Reed, is essentially almost close to a 500 hockey team since the end of January. I think they're 12-15-3, if I'm not mistaken. So they've picked up points in 15 of their last 30 games. And that may not mean a whole lot, but for a team that started as badly as Ottawa did and went on a stretch of 9 games without a win, it's something to build off of. And their goaltending prior to the last little bit of season was absolutely atrocious. Their number one and their number two goaltenders were both number twos, if you know what I mean. They were not good, and I don't mean that in terms of power rankings. I'm talking about a power ranking first thing in the morning, okay?
Yeah, okay.
I don't need to explain it any further, okay. That being said, like, I bring 3 poop bags with me for 2 dogs on a walk every morning, okay? Because they're full of number twos, and the Senators were full of number twos in their goaltending position. And that's putting it mildly. And I, you know what, I don't hesitate to say that. And I think the goaltenders, Matt Murray and Marcus Hogberg, would agree. Their games were completely off. And it's interesting because when it's a terrible correlation here, but both got hurt. So all of a sudden, the young players are thrust into a situation. The minor leaguers are thrust into a situation. And here's the good that you asked about. The team has found out that there are some good young prospects at the goaltending position in this organization. A Joey DeCord, a Philip Gustafson, and to a lesser extent, an Anton Forsberg, who's played the last 2 games and picked up a win in Montreal and took the loss last night in Winnipeg. But they have been 3 goaltenders who have sort of come out of the woodwork and shown that there is a little bit brighter hope for the future at that position. Now, that being said, Marcus Hogberg is off IR, Matt Murray is off IR, and we're expecting both goaltenders to be back in the lineup perhaps as early as tomorrow. I'm thinking, though, that Matt Murray might need an extra practice or two before he gets back into the thick of things. But Marcus Hogberg has been on a minor league stint where he's played 2 games and won 2 games and has now been called back up to the big team. So the goaltending has been a little bit better. Well, I should say a lot better. They've given themselves a chance to win. The goalies have given the Senators a chance to win. And that's probably been the brightest spot for this team over the last 6-7 weeks.
Okay. And quickly, before I let you go, do you expect the Senators to be active prior to the deadline? Or are they thinking we'll build in the summer a little more?
You know what? I think if they can be active, they will be, and it's just in minor league deal, minor terms of deals, not minor leaguers. But if they can get rid of Braden Coburn, they will. If they can get rid of Erica Branson, they will. Both are unrestricted free agents. And these are all players who were brought in with the mindset that, you know what, they're veteran players who will help the young players along through three quarters of the season, and then we'll move on from them and get some you know, prospects in return. My thinking is Ryan Dzingel is a possibility of being traded if they can find a partner for him. He's an unrestricted free agent. Chris Tierney's an interesting one. He's got a year left on his deal. He's had a disastrous year. It's not been his season. Could they find somebody willing to take him on? The team has just brought in a couple of college players who have shifted to the pros in Shane Pinto and Jacob Bernard Docker, and both are expected to play, I think, at least the final 13 games of the season after the trade deadline. So they're going to be stocked, and they're probably looking to stock the cupboard a little bit more as far as draft picks are concerned.
Okay. Gord, always appreciate your perspective, buddy. And thanks for your thoughts on the COVID situation as well. We do appreciate that. Have a good call tomorrow.
Yes, thank you, Reed. Appreciate it. Always a pleasure being on with you.
That is Gord Wilson. The guy's all over the Ottawa Senators. Their radio analyst knows his stuff. And yeah, about a year ago, he was getting through COVID. It hit him pretty hard. So like you said, about 6 months until he kind of got his wind back, so to speak. 7:21 Inside Sports on Chet. Oilers and the Senators tomorrow. The face-off show is at 1:30 and the game starts at 3. General Manager Ken Holland was on with Bob earlier today. I've been asked, Benson, Tyler Benson, Cooper Marody, Ryan McLeod, having great seasons on the farm, could they possibly get a call-up? Well, here's Holland on why it's highly unlikely.
If they come here, you know, you can just look at the ice time every night, and the guys at the bottom part of the forwards at the bottom part of the roster play, you know, if you don't kill penalties, and it's hard to believe those guys are going to come up and kill penalties. If they don't go on the power play, it's hard to believe they're going to come up and go on the power play. You play 7, 8, 9 minutes. That's all you got. And so, you know, I don't know that they can come up and impact the team playing. You got to play special teams. You got to play special teams. And when you get to the, when you get down the stretch run, I don't know that the coach wants to experiment with young players on the power play, the penalty killing, especially when you factor in the players that were the experience and the players that we're putting on the power play. So I just think that those young players are in a great spot. And let them continue to develop, and down the road they'll be here, and then you come in, and then starting off at the beginning of the season, that's when the coach puts you on those specialty teams. If you don't play in the specialty teams in the National Hockey League, it's hard to get minutes. There's probably one defenseman that might not play in either of the specialty teams, and there's 2 to 4 forwards that don't. If you don't play specialty teams, it's hard to get more than 10 minutes max. You're anywhere from 7 to 10 minutes if you don't play specialty teams.
All right, so those three guys, great season in the minors. They're the big dogs there right now, and he's going to let them keep being the big dogs with the Condors for the rest of this season. Blue Jays trailing the Rangers 5-1 in the middle of the fifth. Team Canada, Brendan Botcher at Worlds, up 1-0 on China tonight in the second end. Buffalo wins 5-3 over the Devils. Taylor Hall held out of the game with a trade coming for him by Monday's deadline. It is the Islanders leading the Capitals 1-0 late in the third period. 4.5 minutes left. Rangers up 8-3 on the Penguins. 7 minutes left in Philly. Boston leading at 3-2. 4.5 to go. Carolina up 3-2 on the Panthers. 2 minutes left for the Blue Jackets as they're beating the Lightning 4-1. It's 1-1 in the third, Red Wings and Predators. Late second period, Chicago leading Dallas 2-0. Kubalik with his 13th of the season, and Kirby Dach his first of the year. Remember, he got hurt prepping for the World Juniors.
I'm looking forward to getting to camp, but I think I'm more so excited to wear the Maple Leaf again.
I'm just trying to go in with the mindset of I'm there to make a team again.
Good players all over Canada. It's the best of the best for this age group. Being able to put that jersey on and it would put a smile on my face for sure.
This year is development camps.
All of our players will have to quarantine for 14 days.
Our expectations have not changed one bit. We're here to defend our gold medal.
And Kirby Dach, one of the voices you heard in that trailer for a documentary that you will soon be able to watch. It is called Our Game, a World Junior Championship documentary. And I'm pleased to welcome one of the producers of Our Game. You've heard him on this show several times in the past. He's brought you many great sports-related films in recent years. It is Adam Scorgi. Adam, welcome back to the show, man. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Reed. Appreciate it, bud.
Yeah, it is always good to talk to you. I'm such a big fan of not just your work, but your work ethic, and you keep impressing me with the projects that you get involved in and the ideas that you have, which is so cool. And Our Game, a World Junior Championship documentary. I have a feeling that Canadians are going to like this one because the World Juniors are such a popular event. Tell us where the ball started rolling for this one, man.
Well, you know, this is actually a great, story about doing right and giving back and doing right by others. There's the main producer, Tyler Hines, and the director on this one was a young guy out of Kelowna, and he'd come to some of my previous premieres, and he reached out to me on a whim, and, you know, instead of being like many producers in the industry, instead of, you know, not sharing information and not helping other people, like, I just would always, he'd call me and he'd ask for advice and things and budgets, and I'd help him, and you know, then down he got green lit for this project, and he was like, hey, Adam, you've always helped me and you've never asked for anything or finance. I want to make this year better, so I just want to bring you on. Like, how would you like to produce this with me? And I was like, are you kidding me? To work with the World Juniors in Hockey Canada? Like, I'm in. Like, what do you need? So, you know, he had done most of the research on which guys to follow, and we picked, I think, the best characters with, like, Bo Byram and Kirby Dach, and, you know, it was awesome to get to know these young players and their journey through, and obviously we didn't win gold, but when you watch the series, you'll fall in love with how golden these kids' hearts are, because these are some great kids that really stepped up for that tournament and had to go through a lot with all the COVID restrictions, and we went through our poor... Harrison had to stay in like quarantine with them for 65 days. He was away from his family to be able to film this. So it was quite an experience and something I'm really, really honored that, Tyler paid it forward and brought me on to help produce.
And people are going to be able to watch the episodes on hockeycanada.ca. Everybody knows that website, starting on Thursday, and then another episode on the 15th and another episode on the 22nd. Is there also a YouTube channel they can access it through?
Yeah, so it'll be on the TELUS Optic YouTube channel. And then for those of that have TELUS, it will, I believe it's available on there right now. There's kind of a different release. And then if you happen to miss these and you don't go to the Hockey Canada and stuff like that, then TSN will be playing it right before the tournament next year as well. But we don't want you to wait that long. So go to Hockey Canada or go to the YouTube. Everything will be launching this Thursday and the following Thursdays for the three episodes.
Okay, so with the bubble situation, you sort of touched on it, but I just want to go back to that. Who was in there production-wise? Like, how did you get all the access and footage?
So we had two is great. Like, Hockey Canada was great to work with this time, and TELUS, you know, being one of the big sponsors, really helped us there. And then we had our guy Harrison, who was in there, and then we also had a member from Hockey Canada, where two camera guys. And Harrison, our guy, had to stay in there the entire time. Like, he had to quarantine before he went in. He had to go, like, it was quite an adventure. And then, as we all know, like, several of the players broke out in, like, Red Deer. So then they couldn't even leave their rooms. They were bringing, like, Peloton bikes and workout stuff. And these poor kids, like, they weren't even allowed to go outside for 14 days. They had to stay in a hotel room in Red Deer for 14 days. No training on the ice, no skills. They had to stay. Like, these guys really went through it in this tournament.
Man, That's I'm looking forward to seeing that as well. Adam Scorgi joining us from Scorgi Productions. It is called Our Game, a World Junior Championship documentary. You heard when it's on, and I'll repeat that a couple times before the end of the show as well. I mean, the... I don't know exactly how I want to phrase this, but I mean, the World Junior brings out so much emotion. So is this like, there must be some really raw stuff in here. And especially, I mean, it didn't end the way a lot of the Canadian players would want, despite the fact that they were an excellent team. I mean, was it ever tough, or did you ever have to try to put your emotions aside putting this together?
Yeah, I mean, we were all, like, we were watching it. It was probably, you know, I always watch the World Juniors, but this year being involved and, you know, you want that perfect storyline. And, like, the guys we picked, we were really following Schneider and Goulet and Krebs and Bo Byram and Kirby Docks. And we're like, oh, man, like, okay, like, we've got all these great, we've got, like, the key characters are doing well in the tournament. And then Doc breaks his wrist, like, disgustingly bad, right? He's out. And then... you know, and then Canada doesn't win gold, but then you had, you know, Byram, the way that he went. And, like, if that isn't the true testament of a Canadian captain, that he's bawling his eyes out but handing the silver medals to his team because he knows he has to be classy for the country. And he knows, like, these kids all knew they were very lucky to even be playing with the way the world was at, and they were doing it. You kept saying, and this wasn't a, and it wasn't a sales pitch. They were doing it because they're like, man, the world needs something positive to watch right now. Like, people need an outlet because a lot of people are losing jobs, businesses were closing, COVID was rampant. But, you know, that was really, I think, at the time, the only kind of sports thing going on. I think basketball, everything was paused at that moment, right? So all eyes were on these young kids to really take this, you know, as far as they could. So it's really emotional when you watch it. And we couldn't have, like, that part, I'm going to just, Tyler did research it and pick the kids, but man, are they ever great kids. I just watched again the final episodes with color and everything today, and I'm like, man, I want to get all these kids' jerseys. Like, they're good kids. So, and I say kids, young men, I should say, I'm just, because I'm getting old.
I hear you. I'm there too. Well, I'm so glad to talk to you about this, and I'm always glad to have you on the show because I think. I keep wanting to, I know you're all about your work and your colleagues' work, but I always like to feature you as well because I feel like you're a great example because I'm like, hey, everybody, there's somebody in Edmonton like making outstanding documentaries and films, and a lot of them are about sports, and we should maybe realize that. Like, you don't have to go to LA or Vancouver or Toronto. Like, Adam's right here. So I always like to have you on for that reason as well. And I mean, look, Ice Guardians is obviously the one a lot of people still talk to you about. And I'm going to bring up something here.
Yeah.
Because I remember the very first time we talked, because I think it was Ice Guardians. And I was asking you about, okay, so like you promote it. And you were like, yeah, but I never stopped promoting my work. Like in that way, a film is never finished. I mean, if somebody comes up to you in 20 years and wants to talk about Ice Guardians, you're not going to be like, oh yeah, it's too old. You're going to be like, no, go watch it. I still want you to. And so I'm going to tell this. On Sunday, I watched, and I'd seen it before, but I got to see it again because it came on right after a Botcher curling game ended. And I was like, oh, I want to watch this again. The Engraved on a Nation Donovan Bailey story.
Nice.
And to me, still the greatest non-hockey moments in Canadian sports history, the Bailey gold and then the relay gold. And it was just so cool to still see that story being told and Bailey looking back. So I just want to give you credit for that and just see if you have any comment on the making of that one.
Well, thanks, Reed. Yeah, no, I mean, the same for me. I think almost every Canadian, I remember exactly where I was when Bailey won gold. And that was, you know, I would agree that it is the greatest Canadian sports moment outside of hockey was him winning gold, especially to overcome the shadow of Ben Johnson, right? That, you know, as much as the two of them are different and different worlds, they were so commonly compared, even to this day. Right. When you say Jamaican born, but Canadian raised, Olympic sprinter, unfortunately, a lot of people still be like, oh, you mean Ben Johnson? Like, no, Donovan Bailey, who did it clean. And Donovan Bailey was tested more, like, as they're coming out now, a lot of, not to put shade on any of the other runners, but so many of the other iconic runners from other countries, their tests are all showing that they had performance-enhancing drugs at this point. Donovan was tested arguably more than any other Canadian Olympic athlete ever. And he did it clean, and he set a world record, and he put the country on its toes and kind of solidified Canada that we deserve to be in there with everybody else after the shadow of the previous. That, you know, it was an honor to go on that journey with Donovan and learn how it all started. And got to go to Jamaica, too. It was my first time to ever go there. So that's always a great part to film, is you get to travel in these great locations and go through these journeys with people.
Am I allowed to ask what you're working on now?
Of course. So right now, people can, right now, we just finished the documentary on Michael Bisping called Bisping, and it's only available in Canada right now. On Super Channel, exclusively on Super Channel. It will be releasing internationally through a major studio that I cannot announce, similar to Inmate, if people can catch my drift on that one. That has to be wait to the fall for that to get announced. But I'm telling you, if you watch MMA, even if you don't watch MMA, if you're a fan of Rocky, if you want the real Rocky story, but about a British fighter, it's Michael Bisping. The injuries that guy went through, what he endured to become champion, and then he finally gets his shot at the title, and it's with 2 weeks' notice. He's overweight. He's already lost to Luke Rockhold before. He was like a 16-1 underdog, and he shocks the world, and he becomes a world champion. I highly recommend, if you like underdog stories, Bisping could be the best underdog story I've had to work on. Him and the Danny Trejo are pretty close.
All right. That's awesome. Okay, so our game... Hockey Canada, the first episode comes out on Thursday. And you think, and people with TELUS TV should already be able to find it?
Should already be on their Optic, yeah, on their VOD or SVOD services. Should be on there. But yeah, Hockey Canada will release on Thursday, and then the following episodes will come the following Thursdays.
Awesome. Adam, all the best. We'll talk to you soon, buddy.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Really appreciate it, bud.
That is Adam Scorgi, movie producer, Scorgi Productions, Our Game, a World Junior Championship documentary. It's going to be awesome to watch that. 7:47 Inside Sports on Chet. In the third end, Canada with the hammer. Botcher about to throw his last stone, actually. He's in a 1-1 tie with China. Raptors headed towards a loss. Lakers lead at 102-83 with about 5.5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Blue Jays trailing the Rangers 6-1. That is in the bottom of the sixth. Just updating the NHL here as well. Chicago leads Dallas 3-0 after two. Predators and Red Wings in a 2-2 tie late in the third. Blue Jackets get a win over the Lightning 4-2, the final there. 5-2, the Hurricanes beat the Panthers, two of the best teams in the league right there. Bruins over the Flyers 4-2. The Rangers get 8 against the Penguins. 8-4, the Rangers win. Islanders shut out the Capitals 1-0. Varlamov with the clean sheet. He might win the Vezina. And the Sabres without Taylor Hall, who will be traded in the next week, with a 5-3 win over the New Jersey Devils. Both those teams having tough years. Well, it's the third anniversary of the Humboldt crash. And I struggle to talk about this for a couple of reasons. It's, first of all, it's just such an extremely painful memory for our country, and obviously for the family and friends who, you know, teammates and everybody who knew the 16 crash victims. And it's also difficult to talk about because I feel no matter what I say, it won't be adequate. But I got a text message from someone I really respect earlier today. And he said, Reed, we learned about the crash because you were talking about it Inside Sports. And that just made me feel really emotional. And, you know, working in the media, you do, I think maybe sometimes for me too, I forget that something I'm saying, somebody might be hearing it for the first time, because you prepare your show or you prepare your content and you get on there and do it. And sometimes you forget about how the audience is actually ingesting that and digesting it. And it brought me back to that night, and it was during Inside Sports on a Friday night. And I remember probably between 6:15 and 6:30 seeing a couple things popping up on Twitter about a crash, and, you know, maybe it was here, and the details were so sparse at that time. And I'm always of the belief that I should be very careful about reporting things that I see once, especially when it's something that's potentially tragic, because I would hate to be in a situation where I said, look, something terrible happened, and then it didn't happen. So I was aware of it, and I was very reluctant just to say it at first. And so I'm sort of checking other, checking news outlets in Saskatchewan and some accounts that, you know, I knew would be reliable. And then eventually I thought, okay, something had happened. So I said something that had happened. And even then I was very careful to speculate on anything. There'd been a bus crash, and it appeared to be the Humboldt Broncos bus. And that was really all I was comfortable saying, because again, you just don't know. And I wouldn't want to put anything out there that even in speculation for something like that could be perceived as being what happened. And then obviously even through the show, I was, you know, on till 8 o'clock, it appeared that something very terrible had happened. And, I had Greg Drinnen hopped on the show with me, who wrote the book on the Swift Current tragedy. And, he'd sort of been hearing the same things, that there were deaths involved. And as my show signed off that night, we didn't know how many, but we certainly were hearing it was multiple. And then the news broke further into that evening and, over the next day. And we're still dealing with the fallout, and I think we will be for a long time. You know, the one personal connection I have to that is I've gotten to know Chris Joseph over the years, and his son Jackson was one of the people killed in that crash. And, you know, he's talked about it, and he was on with Bob last week and talked about how it impacts the families and how a lot of people are dealing with it in their own way. So, I don't really have a point here. I don't really have a conclusion to put on this, other than to just share my very small part of that experience. And it's something we all felt, and we felt a lot of pain about. And this is going to be a tough day forever, right? I think for everybody who was alive and is going to be able to remember this crash, I think it's going to be something that's obviously sad for a long time. And I just think it's important to share our stories about it and how we feel about it. And we remember the Humboldt Broncos tonight and the 16 that were lost that day. I'll rejoin you tomorrow at 1:30 for the Face-Off show. Have a good night, everybody.
Six thirty, Chad. Inside Sports with Reed Wilkins, weekdays at 6 on 6:30, Chad.
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his 6-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment, going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains, made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his 2-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone. Like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.